Of course, we're going to take your calls now with Stephen Bassett, and he is also the author of U.S. Presidents and UFOs, The Untold Story. We'll talk a little bit about that, too, when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, Stephen Bassett as well. Stephen, U.S. Presidents and UFOs, who would you say was the champion, if there was one, for a president to try to get these answers?
Boy,
sounds like there's none.
Word. I'm not so sure. obviously, as we've talked about before, the most comprehensive source of information on this phenomenon, U.S. presidents, is Grant Cameron's website, presidentialufo.com. There is a great deal of material there. We've talked about it, parts of it, over the years. It's volumes. I think over the period of the 67 years, some presidents have been given briefings, some have not. Some have been given, I think, something in between. Every president has known about ET presence, but that's not the same thing as being given full national security briefings by the national security structure. In terms of championing the issue, the closest we came to that was President Clinton, who allowed the Rockefeller Initiative to go on for nearly 3 years. This is the effort by Lawrence Rockefeller to get President Clinton to release all the files, grant amnesty for witnesses, and essentially would have ended the truth embargo. That didn't happen for a lot of reasons, but the Rockefeller Initiative, of course, is extremely important. It's part of the evidence of the citizen hearing on disclosure, which is now in every office on Capitol Hill, 3 hours of testimony about the Rockefeller Initiative, which is, I've always said, maybe the linchpin that finally brings this home, because it is the kind of story that the press can dig into, and of course most of the key players, very powerful people, are still on the world stage. So Clinton probably came as close, and over the years he has talked about the ET issue on a few occasions, and other people close to him have done so. There's some evidence Jack Kennedy was looking at this issue. I think he was informed. I do not know how extensively he was briefed, but I believe that he was given information in a more formal way. I think that he was considering trying to address it, that was happening just prior to his assassination. But we'll never know how far he was willing to go. He was really the last president, other than H.W. Bush, I think, to get what I would consider considerable briefing on this. And now the issue has been almost completely pulled out from under the presidency and the Congress operating independently within the national security state or structure. So, but that's just a taste of the intersection between the issue and presidents, and I encourage people to go view Grant Cameron's website, presidentialufo.com. It's a treasure trove of information and very important to the advocacy work. I draw on it all the time.
Would you say that this could be a 2016 issue in the presidential election?
Well, as long as the truth embargo is in place, it cannot be an issue in an election, other than the odd candidate, fringe candidate, that might get in there. I was the first congressional candidate to make it on the November ticket to bring this issue up. Joe Bookman was the second. A gentleman by the name of Ken Lodgerman in Virginia brought it up as part of his campaign, and he was on the November ballot for Congress. But that's pretty much it. Carter, admittedly, did talk about the UFOs concept in his campaign, naively so, because he'd had a sighting. And as a result, he got quite a bit of mail regarding the issue and actually made an attempt to look at it. Again, Carter came into Washington from a very naive position. Those studies were rejected. He did sort of run through a study that was eventually closed out by Marcia Smith, working at the Library of Congress. Another study was shut down by the Pentagon. So in a sense, he started to champion the issue. But that's about it. Admittedly, notably, Gerald Ford, who did become president, championed the 1960, you know, was a champion on the hearings that occurred in 1966 and 1968. I'm not sure he knew what he was getting into, frankly. A guy I consider an honest man. So that's a limited. We had a few other politicians, Claiborne Pell, and of course Stephen Schiff of New Mexico, that brought the issue up. They're few, and they don't go too far because the truth embargo is very seriously conducted.
Okay, let's go to the phones now, Stephen. They're lining up for you. Mike's in Connecticut. Mike, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, George, Merry Christmas. Steve, excellent
you
show.
Too,
I just think this information is just way too powerful for Congress. I don't think Congress is cleared. I don't think the president is cleared for this kind of information. I believe, this is my opinion, that it's just the general public isn't ready for this kind of information. It would cause, believe, mass chaos, rioting, civil unrest. It would have tremendous religious complications, economic complications. This thing is just way too big for us to disclose. But I do give you credit. I hope you do get the congressional hearings. I don't think the hearings are going to do much good. They'll give these witnesses the time to testify and hear their stories, and they're going to pack up their bags and say, well, thanks for showing up, and that'll be about as far as it'll go, in my opinion. What do you
think? All right. Let's get Stephen's reaction. Stephen, obviously you would think otherwise, but go ahead.
Look, I understand that 67 years now into the truth embargo, that anyone would be pessimistic that suddenly this could simply change, that something could break this out. I get that. But, of course, that's the role of the advocacy process. You create a situation, you maneuver it into a place where, in fact, you do get what you want. And I constantly use the analogy of the Soviet Union, which had an 83-year run from 1918 to 1991. There was a great deal of pessimism within the Soviet Union and outside the Soviet Union of that situation unraveling. It just didn't seem possible, but in fact it did. It was over when it was over, and it lasted 78 years, or rather 83 years, or 73 years. The truth embargo was 67 years on. And from my vantage point, and I'm able to pay attention to this in great detail, as Mike does not have that privilege or luxury right now, I can say to Mike that things are unraveling. You may not see it, but they are. And the strategy underway can succeed. And so just hang in there. Be patient. If you can help out with the social media campaign, you can go to factsonwashington.org, jump in, send out some Twitter and Facebook messages and so forth. But I hold out optimistically that we get this done and hopefully get it done next year.
Stephen, one thing that seems to be changing is the political climate of a police state, as opposed to where we've been over the last several years. Could that affect this at all if there's more and more governmental control over us?
Certainly. This is a process that's been underway for a long time. I talk about it a lot. Richard Dolan, a good friend and colleague, talks about it. You've had other people on your show. The combination of the Soviet threat and the nuclear arms race, along with the presence of extraterrestrials, the acquisition of extraterrestrial technology, extraterrestrial bodies, served as a justification for building a huge national security intelligence complex in the United States, unlike anything the world has ever seen. The one that Eisenhower warned us about and many others have warned us about for decades now. And that is a problem. It is a huge problem. And guess what? When you build a national security state or national security structures, it's inevitable that it starts to morph into a police state. Police state would be the child, the expectant child of a national security state. And that has been out there. That risk has been out there for some time. People have warned us about it. Well, guess what? We're starting to see it happen. So the national security state morphs into a police state. This has obviously got to stop. We really don't want to go down that road. I mean, you know, the country is 230-some years old. I get it. It's had a nice run. But many nations and empires have ended. We could just be the next one. Is that what we want? Is the American people ready to pack it in? I would hope not. We have a lot of strength still. We have a lot of power as individuals. We have the internet, and we have the ability to turn this around. But if we do not, then the police state that we're starting to see emerge will continue to develop. And at some point, it will impact the ability to fix the problem. And at some point, you then get an irreversible beyond point of no return, and we see the collapse of our constitutional republic. So one more reason to get the truth embargo out of the way, get it done, and then see where we can go from there.
And get it done fast. Gregory in Olympia, Washington. Greg, go ahead.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good, Greg.
I had trouble getting my idea across to your telephone operator, so I hope I have better success with you.
Sure.
Truth embargo implies secrecy, does it not?
Of course.
Yeah, I'm trying to rephrase my question. Maybe this alien presence, alien agenda you keep talking about, the disclosure project is part of their agenda to break the truth embargo, secrecy.
Yeah.
And does that make sense?
Yeah, I think I have talked about this. Again, I'm not in any position to say matter-of-factly what the extraterrestrial agenda is, but we do have 67 years of information to look at, and my view that when you look at the actions of extraterrestrials, one of the things I believe you see is a process in which their activities are driving a public awareness, pushing us towards having to deal with their presence without actually coming straight out and laying it on the table. The extraterrestrials clearly act in a covert fashion, by and large. They certainly don't simply park ships over our countries, our nations, or whatever. They come and go. They deal with contactees in a covert and sometimes coercive fashion. But nevertheless, they are seen a great deal. They give messages to contactees. They put crop circles in the fields, which seem to have interesting connotations. So I am forced to conclude that one of the agendas is to, aside from whatever else they're doing, is to drive this self-disclosure, self-awareness process, which ultimately has to logically lead to the governments of the world announcing it, confirming it to their own people, which logically goes to the fact that this may be one of their intentions. And so, in a sense, I kind of view the extraterrestrials as partners, de facto partners in the advocacy process. That's my assessment. I could be wrong, but I feel comfortable that that's very likely.
Let's go to Thomas now in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hey, Thomas, go ahead.
Hey, George and Steve, thank you for letting me call. Real quick, I'll try to get through 2 points real quick. One, the chemtrails. Now, we know that there's barium and all this stuff in there. It's thanks to Henry Kissinger, you know, wants to call the herd, kill us off. But is it possible that with the nanoparticle aluminum, that it could be used as kind of like a radar effect because we're breathing a whole bunch of aluminum in and to where they can scan? Because the one NASA photo where you see a plasma shot coming up and the ship moving back out real quick, are they trying to shoot out the good aliens coming in to help us or whatever? And the second point is, in 94, I was in Rachel, the little alien, which is the black tail box and all that, at a UFO conference. And Bob Lazar wasn't supposed to come, but he did. He wasn't supposed to talk, and he did. And in his talk, he said that he was in the famous 9 hangars that he said that he worked in, and in between the walls of those hangars were doors, and they were open, and he was inside one of the ships, and he popped up and looked out, and he saw Dick Cheney, at the time Secretary of State, and a couple generals and a couple alien grays. You might want to get George Knapp and have Bob Lazar on, maybe talk about that. And I'll listen off the air. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Incredible story there, Stephen.
Well, first of all, I'm not an expert on chemtrails or that phenomena. I'm glad it's being looked at. I'm glad that people are paying attention. It's complicated. The one thing I can say about it is this, that if the government has gone so far, has been audacious enough to execute some kind of either weather modification or program involving putting materials in our skies on a regular basis with unknown consequences, that this arrogance could only have happened after decades of successfully running a truth embargo on the ET issue and building the national security structures, that it's essentially the chemtrails would be a child of this process. And one more reason why we need to end that process. In other words, we've got to reverse the construction of this vast national security complex. We need to reform it. We need to get the government in the truth business, because if they are able to continue down this road, there's going to be more things like that. That's one thing I can say about that. In terms of Lazar, Bob Lazar is a very interesting story. I'm not familiar with that particular statement by Lazar. I do know that there's some indication he may be coming forward again soon. I consider him an important witness, and I do believe that elements of his core story are true, and the key reason for that is that I have such respect for George Knapp, and George Knapp believes Bob Lazar. George obviously knows much more about Lazar and his total story than I, but George believes it, and that's a lot. So he's a significant witness, but he's not the only one. There are plenty of witnesses ready to testify on the Hill, and their collective testimony will leave no doubt in the mind of any reasonable person that the CT presence is real. So we're going to get people on the Hill with their hand in the air making that testimony hopefully soon.
If George has been duped, he's been duped big time, and I don't think he has been.
Let me put it this way. George Knapp is not an easy guy to dupe, and he had close personal contact with his story going back many years.
He lives and breathes this story.
Well, yeah, but he knows it well. There are a number of well-known players here. But, you know, Lazar's story is one of the most fascinating, and it has a very important connection to Coast to Coast AM. But, you know, it's just one of many, many firsthand testimonies that are in play. And so I try not to put too much emphasis on it. Mm-hmm. But I think certainly if I'm Hollywood and this whole issue breaks open, he's one of the guys I'd be talking to almost immediately for a movie.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'd absolutely want to have a movie about Bob.
Steve, we're going to come back in just a moment and take final phone calls with you. Stephen Bassett, our special guest. Great websites, all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download our free apps as well in the various stores for Android or your Apple iPhone. We'll be back. And don't forget, live programs for you on Christmas Eve and Christmas night. We will be here, special guests, you name it, we've got it. Plus, we'll be tracking Santa on NORAD throughout the Christmas Eve night as well. Lots coming up this week on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be back in a moment with Stephen Bassett and your final calls. Don't touch your dial. Welcome back. Stephen Bassett with us. Final phone calls as well. Stephen, take a few moments to tell folks about your websites and some of the things you'd like them to do once they get there.
Yes, certainly. A number of sites are in play here. First of all, the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure. Its homepage is citizenhearing.org, where you can learn about this event from 2013. And I should make note that the commercial quality downloads of the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure are now available there. We anticipate the commercial-level DVDs and Blu-rays will be available fairly soon as well. You can see the witnesses, you can see their backgrounds, and so forth. A substantial site, citizenhearing.org. The social media campaign underway to assist the Congressional Hearing Initiative in getting hearings is located at faxonwashington.org, FAX on Washington.org, disclosure.media. that's a domain, and the Facebook page, the Disclosure Lobby. There you can quickly find the links that will allow you to go and send Twitter and Facebook messages, hashtag disclosure, to members of the House, members of the Senate, as many as you want, as often as you want, and also links to the email form pages, where you can email any member of the Senate, or you can email your representative in Congress and do that as often as you like. All these messages are about looking at the DVDs from the citizen hearing, meeting with me regarding congressional hearings, and of course we want hearings for the witnesses ready to testify. The main page, of course, the main site, portal site for all of this is paradigmresearchgroup.org. And I should also mention that there's a considerable amount of material that's being developed by PRG's media productions head, and that's Ron James. This is a website called iVolve TV, I-V-O-L-V-E TV, iVolveTV.com. He's building up a substantial library of disclosure-related material there, including a very long interview with me later earlier this year where I get into the strategies underway and so forth, which I commend to you. So I certainly invite you to go visit Ron James, you know, developing network there, iVolveTV.com. So these are, I think, some of the key sites that people can jump into.
Okay, back to final calls here for you, Stephen. Mark is in Fort Lauderdale, Florida now. Mark, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Good morning, George and Steve.
Good morning. Good to talk.
First of all, the crop circles and these alien field hieroglyphics, what would be the point of, I mean, we can't decipher this. So what would be the point of them doing this other than, you know, to say, we're here, we're watching you, and maybe it's a warning, you know, to, sure. You all need to straighten up, mind your P's and Q's, you know, get your planet together.
I have to say
there's
that
two other things I wanted to say real quick.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'm very intrigued by it. The fact of the matter is that year after year, these crop circles or hieroglyphs are being laid down in the same fields in the UK year after year. And as each year has gone by, the number of people that are paying attention has grown. There's like a crop circle season. Thousands of people go over there. They take night vision binoculars. They take cameras, tripods. They bring ultralight airplanes. They fly all over the place. They try to find these things as soon as they're made. And in other words, if you don't want your presence known, if you want to try to remain, you know, in the background, why on earth would you do this? And one of the things that's happening now is that so many people are there that they're now flying over these fields with planes, and then they're coming back a few minutes later, and then there's, boom, a huge crop circle there, which virtually takes the human construction component completely out of the picture. I think that, at minimum, this is a hello, here we are, a developing a process of ever-increasing complexity, which seems to be leading to some sort of culmination point. So I tend to put the crop circle phenomena in the ET activities that are impacting the disclosure process, meaning they're helping to advance it by the very things that they do. And also, I believe that the nature of crop circles is such that it's a very encouraging evidence that the extraterrestrial agenda ultimately is constructive and not destructive. But we don't know for sure, and we will not know for sure until after disclosure.
What do you think of David Jacobs' theories that there's something a little more sinister going on here?
David is one of the leading and longtime researchers of contactee phenomena. He has developed a view that there is a very negative component to this involving colonization. I'm familiar with the view. I'm familiar with his thinking on it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's disagreement there, and that's not surprising. He may be right. I certainly hope he's not. Right now, I would say no. I do not think that colonization is the outcome of this phenomenon going on, but I cannot rule it out. And so David's contributions are extremely important and worth serious consideration, but there are other interpretations of the phenomena, other researchers, and a huge volume of contactee reports that have been generated and are in the hands of researchers. So I think one needs to keep a somewhat open mind as they review this material.
Do you think we're being visited by different kinds of ET races, not just one from one planetary system, but from all over the place?
The evidence clear we're being developed by multiple species, I guess you could use that word, because guess what? There's huge numbers of planets in our galaxy, as the evidence obviously shows now, vast number of planets, more potential civilizations developing separately. And so, yes, but it's also notable that if that is true, and I believe it is, that that means that there's cooperation going on. And it's clear from the evidence and the contact reports that there is cooperation going on. And so what do we know? We know that there's non-human species out there from different planets that are cooperating with each other in conducting their affairs here. That leads to the obvious conclusion that there are political alliances, and that leads to the conclusion that it's possible we would be part of such an alliance in the near future, and that this whole transition period underway is leading toward exactly that. Now, these are conclusions. These are, you know, not certain. This is just a best estimate, but it's encouraging to me that they are working together and that they're here, and I think that that is worth noting.
Mark is in Detroit and now on Coast to Coast. Mark, go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen, and happy holidays to you.
You too, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. I spoke to you before, Mr. Bassett, and you were talking about the citizens' disclosure, or however they came into.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wouldn't mind being one to go for, because I talked to the call screener about a situation where I could be able, maybe, just maybe, to show you what happened. I won't say it on the air. I'll leave it alone. I'll let the call screener tell you, and thanks to the call screener for listening to that.
Sure.
You will be able to see it because of the way how you can go from Canada or you can go from Detroit and see this yourself at the same time that it happened. But I'm going to leave that alone. And I want to talk about the disclosure. I'm here with Carolyn Cheeks Kilpatrick, which was a person that was on that committee, right?
Yes.
And I would like to run into her here, but it's kind of hard to get in, you know, contact with her to speak about it, because I can, matter of fact, on the Channel 2 News here in Detroit, you can look at the background of what they got in the background of them, and it's part of what happened. It's part of what it is. It's on the back. You know how they have, like, the moniker in the background, like, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
In the city?
Yeah. I used to work there, Mark, a long time ago.
Well, it should be simple for you, Mr. Nord. You should look right there on the board, on the back of them, you know, that shows up in the back, that bright situation right there on the, yeah, that's it. I am trying to, and I want to lead you to a couple people. Now, Minister Louis Farrakhan had a Savior's Day in 2014 here, and he spoke about the Pope. He went to see the Pope and a couple other people, but the Pope had spoke to him and told him not to be talking about this. And I'll let you listen to, you can YouTube it or Google it and see what he said to the Pope about it. He spoke about the wheel over your head. And you can also go to this other individual by the name of the Son of Man. He is the new nation of Islam. And this is nothing to do with race or religion or nothing. He is called the exhibitor of them. So when I spoke to him about what happened to me in a small sense, he let it be known that it is a destroyer. The mother plane is called a destroyer. It's over your head. I saw it myself. It's oh my God.
All right, I'm looking for it. I'll talk to Tommy about your story. Sounds fascinating to me. I love these stories, Stephen. They're everywhere.
Sure, they're all over the world. There's a huge amount of sightings. There's a lot of contact going on. People are trying to interpret these sightings and this contact in the best way they know how, given their background and so forth. And we're getting a range of interpretations. And the people are more confident, more willing to come forward and talk about it. And of course, that is a problem for the truth embargo. And barring, again, the creation of a police state and serious repression of speech and activities in this country, that's only going to continue. And so if you are managing the truth embargo, you're really playing a losing game now. And it's time for the government to get proactive, to take control of this in the sense that make it their own, to come forward, tell the truth, begin the post-disclosure world. And I think they will be quite shocked at how well that's going to go. and how well it will be received. But right now, that is not the case, and the job of this advocacy movement is to make it the case, to get the government in the truth business. And then stories like Mark's and many thousands more will get sorted out in the post-disclosure world, and we'll know the truth of these things and not have to simply speculate.
In the old days, Stephen, when we had people like George Adamski claiming that they had been to Venus and things like that, did that hurt those cases in the past? I mean, did people think that they were whacked out?
Well, I understand, George. Those are the earliest years of the modern era. Roswell occurred in 47. The major sightings started in early 47. So those that were coming forward, for whatever reason, some of which could have been disinfo, brought into the arena by the government itself, it was messy times and early. So not surprisingly, the lack of sophistication certainly made it easier for the press to dismiss the issue. The truth embargo was a serious project, is a serious project by the government. They put enormous resources in it. And so you always have to look at any history in this field through that filter. I think that post-disclosure, some of the things that happened in the 50s will be looked on with a lot more kindness and a lot more appreciation. Maybe we'll learn more details about who was saying what and why. It's a fascinating era. Fortunately now, we're much more sophisticated and we have evidence from a much newer time. So we don't, you know, the truth embargo's fate does not rely on the statements and activities between 50 and 60. But it's a very interesting time, and I have colleagues that are researching it, and I look forward to learning more.
Okay, let's take a few more calls here. First-time caller Carl is in Cape Cod, Massachusetts now. Hello there, Carl. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Great morning. Show. I've been listening for a couple of years now.
Thank you,
trash out early in the morning. The stars were out, and I always look for the space station, something, right? This thing goes whipping across the sky. It was a flat disk, invisible, moving very fast across the horizon, and the stars were going mirror image in reverse. And I haven't heard that described by anybody. I just want to put it out there that, yeah, there's something buzzing around the Cape. I've seen the orange thing, too.
Yes, indeed.
You know, Stephen, one of the reasons why I think Jacobs might be right is because the presence isn't, you know, so obvious. It's everything's done in the cloak of secrecy. And to me, that means there's something wrong.
Well, secrecy, let's just say that the extraterrestrials are operating in a covert way. There's no question. But on the other hand, they are seen quite often. Millions of sightings have taken place. And, of course, we know that contactees are coming forward. We know their memories can be blocked, but there's been quite a bit of memory leakage. A lot of these memories are being reclaimed through hypnotic regressions. So if their intention is strict secrecy, they're not working all that hard to maintain it. So I view the process as a gradual indoctrination, and I have to think the extraterrestrials are doing that intentionally, and I think it has something to do with this gradualism to introduce their reality into this modern civilization we have leading up to the self-disclosure event. Now, perhaps they could have been more open about this, maybe been more direct. They could have simply parked ships over our cities. I don't know. It may be they have work that they need to do, and they need to complete that work. We don't know enough details. But, again, if you look at the total picture and not just the covert aspect of their activities, I think it's easier to come to a conclusion that their ultimate intentions are not destructive. That's where I'm at right this now. And I'll tell you, George, if I didn't think that, I mean, if I thought that their fundamental intentions were destructive based on what I've seen and heard, I would say so. I have no agenda in painting the extraterrestrials to be anything than what they are. But, of course, we don't know the exact reality because the government has prevented us from knowing that.
But you would not be shocked one way or another whether they were, you know, here for a good purpose or not. If we ever find out. Nothing would shock you, right?
It would be difficult to shock me. There are some things that would surprise me in a post-disclosure arena. We'll see. But again, I'm not alone. I have colleagues that feel the same way. I have colleagues that don't. Overall, for your listeners, edification, after 18 years of following this, I believe that the outcome will be fundamentally okay and that you should look forward to a positive outcome.
And when do you want people to start signing this disclosure petition?
That petition will go up and be signable unless they take a day to get it up by the 7th of January. And so if you go to disclosurepetition.org, you can actually see the petition, what's going to go up on the 7th of January. You can get links to the White House website where you can go and sign up for the We the People. You have to register there. You have to sign up in order to sign petitions. It doesn't take long. So you got about 2-3 weeks almost to get ready and spread the word through Facebook and Twitter that this petition is going to be up on the 7th of January. We'll have 30 days. That's why we're trying to get a running head start here, to make generate as many signatures as possible. So the key site right now is disclosurepetition.org, and on January the 7th, petition will go up on the White House website.
Super. Stephen Bassett, thank you. You have yourself a great Christmas, my friend. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.